We commence today with the 21st chapter of the book of Genesis. You know, we're considering the faith life of Abraham. And we believe that the first two verses of the 21st chapter of Genesis are sublime. We read, "And the Lord visited Sarah, as he had said. And the Lord did unto Sarah, as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived, and bare Abraham a son in his old age, at the set time of which God had spoken to him." You know, dear friend, that it says Jehovah visited Sarah as he had said he would, and that Sarah conceived, and she bare Abraham a son. But it says in his old age, at the set time of which God had spoken to him. Now we know that insofar as the virility was concerned, Abraham had this. But insofar as Sarah was concerned, she was barren. But since Sarah was barren, it might just as well have been that Abraham was barren. Because without Sarah, there could have been no seed. That is, there could not have been the promised seed. This is evidenced by the fact that Abraham did have a seed by Hagar. And then even after this, he had children by Keturah. So it is quite evident that no miracle needed to be performed insofar as Abraham was concerned. The miracle concerns merely Sarah. And this is very, very interesting, dear friends, because in this we have a type, as it were, which concerns the mystical seed of Abraham. That mystical seed is Christ, head and body. Insofar as Jehovah is concerned, no one would dare say that he lacks the power of creation or procreation, even though there was but one being that he had brought into existence directly, and that was the Logos. He was the first and only direct creation of God, and for that matter, the last. He was the first and the last, the Alpha, the Omega, the beginning, and the end. What we say, dear friends, we've got here something that makes us think that the time that Isaac was born of Sarah was in itself a prototype of the Christmas that is still to be, when Sarah, by that we mean the Sarah covenant, shall give birth to the Christ on the spirit plane. This Christ, as Isaac was, will be the seed of promise and will be the heir through whom all God's blessings shall reach the world of mankind as the blessings and favor. And the wealth that Abraham had to reach Ishmael and all the other sons by way of Isaac, the direct heir. Now we note then, dear friends, that this Christmas that is to be will not be heralded as was the Christmas when Jesus was born. That was, as we might say, the beginning of the antitype of this particular thing. The head was born 1900 years ago, but the body is still in the process of deliverance, and it will not be completely delivered until that morning, that grand and glorious morning, when each and every one who has made his calling and election sure has become eternally identified with the seed of promise. Already the Apostle Paul declares that if we be Christ, then are we Abraham's seed and heirs of the promise. But you will recall, dear friends, that Sarah represented one feature of the Abrahamic covenant. And that feature of the Abrahamic covenant had to do with the development of the seed. There comes a time when Sarah shall be no more. But this does not mean that there will not be an Abrahamic covenant. But the Sarah feature will cease. Sarah died before Abraham did. And Abraham, by way of Keturah, brought forth additional children. So we see the Sarah feature of the Abrahamic covenant does come to an end. But the Abrahamic covenant is an everlasting covenant and will never come to an end. The promise had been made to Abraham, and the promise had been made to Sarah that they were to have a seed. But you know, Sarah even laughed. I don't think she laughed because she felt that it was impossible. There might have been a little incredulity in her laugh. We wouldn't be surprised at that. For all of these many years, she had been barren. And to assist God, as it were, she had asked Abraham to take Hagar to wife. And by Hagar, he brought forth Ishmael. Ishmael means God hears. It's a wonderful thought. But this Ishmael corresponds to the Israelitish nation, whereas Isaac corresponds to the seed of promise, which is the spiritual Israel of God, and the earthly seed, while itself also the seed of Abraham, will in no way be identified with the spiritual seed, which is Christ. Now, there are many things implied in this, and if we have the time, we expect to go into this in a little detail and see the spiritual import of this. But first of all, we wanted you to get this thought in mind, that Sarah corresponds to the Sarah feature of the Abrahamic covenant, that Abraham corresponds to Jehovah, the seed of promise, Isaac, corresponds to Christ, head and body, the seed of promise, through whom all the families of the earth are to be blessed. In the third verse, we find this beautiful thought expressed, and Abraham called the name of his son that was born unto him, whom Sarah bare to him, Isaac. You notice the way the Holy Spirit of God caused these words to be recorded. You notice the peculiar structure of the sentence. And Abraham called the name of his son that was born unto him, whom Sarah bare to him, Isaac. You see, there can be no doubt about the matter. It was Abraham's son. It was the son that Sarah bore unto Abraham. And he called the name of that son Isaac. I cannot help but think of that Christmas morning that we've been talking about, when the Christ head and body shall be born on the spirit plane of the divine nature. When that time comes, there will be laughter throughout all the earth, because the blessing of the Father will be manifested worldwide. Laughter, yes, that's what Isaac means. And Sarah corroborates this thought. God hath made me to laugh, so that all that hear will laugh with me. Isn't that beautiful? and to call the child's name Laughter. I think how Jesus, when he was born, how the angel declared, "Thou shalt call his name Jesus, for he shall save his people from their sins." For Jesus, that meant nothing but trial and suffering. There was nothing of joy save as it was the joy of doing the Father's will. He suffered much. Much vitality went out from him. But we find, dear friends, even when he instituted the memorial of his own death, likening it unto suffering, he says, "And I shall not again drink of this vine of the earth until I drink of it anew with you in the kingdom." The wine, the cup which he had been drinking, was one of sorrow, was one of suffering. The cup which the Father hath poured, shall I not drink it? Certainly it was a cup which he had to drink to the dregs. But the new wine, the wine of the kingdom, it'll still be the vine of the earth. Yes, it'll be something that has to do with this earth. There will be joy in the Christ. There will be joy in Jehovah. When as a result of the ministry of the church, Christ's head and body, the whole world of mankind will be brought around to that state in which Adam was before he sinned, and throughout all the ages of eternity will be praising God. Today you hear people speak about God, even in everyday language, and yet how much of it is praise? I dare say that you speak of Jehovah, you speak of his Christ a lot in your daily living, but how much of it, I ask you, is praise? Oh, yes, we must suffer. Yes, and that's where we put the burden of our wheat, on the suffering. But, dear friends, to suffer without joy, without the knowledge that we're pleasing God and that he, by way of this suffering, is preparing us for the future joy, robs us of all that is our heritage in this time. I trust you know whereof we speak. And then, let's assume now that that picture is complete. We have another picture. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac, being 8 days old, as God had commanded him. And Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born unto him. I'd like you to note, dear friends, that it says Abraham circumcised his son Isaac, being 8 days old. You remember that in a later experience in God's word, that Moses had 2 children whom he had failed to circumcise. But there the circumcision was left to the wife, Zipporah, the mother of the 2 children. And the reason for that undoubtedly is that God had declared he would use Moses as his servant, as his representative. But since he hadn't circumcised his children in obedience to the covenant relationship which existed between God and the seed of Abraham, God couldn't use him. And he was ready to kill him. But dear friends, you'll notice that he says to Zipporah that she shall circumcise the 2 children, lest she should lose her husband. Now, this is the way that God puts it in his word, of course. It isn't that Christ would die. But insofar as we, the church, are concerned, if we do not practice circumcision of the heart, we will lose our husband. And you see, it is relative. Whether we lose our husband or our husband dies, it is one and the same thing. In the spiritual, there is also the relative. We mean the same as Jesus, and that's when he says, if you had faith like a grain of mustard seed, you could say to this mountain, be removed, and it would be removed. But did you ever try to move a mountain that way? You probably wouldn't find it moved. The only way that you can move the mountain is relatively, by putting the mountain behind you. And if you have sufficient faith, you will climb the mountain and put the mountain behind you, and thus faith has removed the mountain, but not without work. So you see, relativity, even though Einstein was only came into the vision here a short time ago, the Bible and God had his own theory of relativity long, long before. So in some instances we find the truth is given in one way, and then in another you will find it in the reverse way. But no matter which way, negative or positively, it is always the self-same truth. Call to mind the Ten Commandments given at Mount Sinai. There you find the law of God, which is love, negatively expressed. Thou shalt not have any other God. Thou shalt not covet. But when Jesus gave that same law, or epitomized it, he says, thou shalt love the Lord thy God. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Thus you see, dear friends, negatively or positively expressed, it's relative, yes, but it is the absolute, the only unchangeable truth. Even as Jesus, the same yesterday, today, and forever, and as God himself, with whom there is no variableness nor shadow caused by church. It says here, Abraham circumcised his son. Now you see, here it is, Abraham does it. And dear friends, in the ultimate, if you are cut off from the flesh, or the flesh is cut off from you, relatively expression, it is a work of God himself. Work not for the truth, the spirit of the truth. There could never be any circumcision of the heart in any of us. So since the truth is ours by God's grace, and since it is by faith, which is God's grace, and this is not of ourselves, but the gift of God, you see, dear friends, how it is that in this matter of circumcision, you yield yourself. Just as a child of 8 days yields itself to the father. What can the child do? Absolutely nothing. It lies there impotent. And the work of circumcision is performed. Painful, nevertheless, but not so painful as it would be in later years of life. And so the sooner we come to the point where we dedicate and consecrate our lives unto God, the less painful, the less hard will it be for us to endure the cutting off of the world and the flesh. This is undoubtedly the sentiment of the wise man of old who says, remember thy Creator in the days of thy youth. And then he speaks about the grinders and the windows and so forth. They become dark, yes. Not so easy then when you've crystallized or formed a hardened character. But in the early days when you're soft and pliable, that's the time, dear friends, when God can do great things. Now, it isn't to say that God cannot work upon a hardened character. Yea, oft times he takes the hardest that there are, and he makes of them the soft. How often you've looked at people and seen them as though they were hard and stony. But as you got better acquainted with them, you began to see underneath the shell, you began to see what God had been working on. You began to see that softness, that gentleness of spirit, that Christ-likeness. You see, dear friends? But the thought here is that Abraham circumcised his son. So it is God that performs the work of circumcision upon the antitypical Isaac class.
It is God who judges.
No one else is permitted to do it. Not even Sarah. You see, dear friends?
And so we find, too, in the 8th chapter of Leviticus, how God there shows that even our setting apart in this consecration is all His. Even though Moses is used to represent and to typify God, it is Moses who does all of the work. Moses brings the sons of Aaron together with Aaron. He brings the bullocks. He brings the rams. He brings the oil. He brings the garments. He brings the unleavened bread. And he does all the work with it and consecrates or sets apart that priestly tribe. Now you see, dear friends, there God shows that it is all of him. He calls. No man taketh this honor upon himself, save he that was called, as was Aaron. And so we see, that is a picture. But when God would show what you have to do in the matter, it changed. It's no longer the bullock that represents the church. Now you find a goat. But that goat has to be beheaded, you see. And in the 9th chapter of Leviticus, there is no scapegoat. Because God never intended to call anyone to be members of the scapegoat class. God called all in the one hope of their calling. And that is the reason we say that all have been begotten to the divine nature. All will not attain to the same nature. All will attain to the spirit nature. Even as in the human, both male and female are human. But there's a difference between the male and the female. And so all who have been begotten of the Spirit will attain to the Spirit nature, but all will not be of the divine nature. Brother Russell had some difficulty with this matter. Some of the friends couldn't understand how you could be begotten to the divine nature and yet never attain to the divine nature. And because of these simple minds, he changed the language in the first volume and said, begotten to the spirit nature. But he says, not that I have changed my thought at all. It still remains the same. And so, dear friend, for the benefit of you that are here today, in case someone should bring the question to you, we'll give you another illustration that comes from Brother Russell, too. And this is in harmony with the picture that we have before us. A father desired to have a son in his own image. He wanted to beget a son that should be like unto himself. And as a result of the begettal, triplets were born. One was a boy. Two were girls. It was one begettal. But you see, in the begetting, there was only one object, to have someone that would be his own image, and that would be the son. But as a result of the birth, however, as a result of the begetting, however, two girls were born. They were not in the original purpose, but they resulted from the self-same begetting. You see the point? And so the begetting is to the divine nature. And the divine nature is one in which the flesh has no part. We might say the same of the spirit. Any who attains to the spirit nature, the flesh will also have to be destroyed. But there is a difference. And this warfare between the flesh and the spirit is also pictured in the two sons of Abraham, the one Isaac, representing the spiritual, and the other Ishmael, representing the flesh. Even though we consider in this picture that Isaac represents the church class, that he'll be exalted to the divine nature, and Ishmael himself will merely be a worldly class, an earthly class, the fleshly Israel, so to speak. One is fleshly, and the other is spiritual. And there is a continual warfare between the flesh and the spirit. And so there was between Isaac and Ishmael, though it didn't last very, very long. This circumcision, you'll notice, was performed on the eighth day. And here again, we have brought to our attention the thought of the eighth day. Jesus, you remember, was raised up on the eighth day. Oh, you say it was the first. Yes, it was the first day of the week, but it was the morning after the Sabbath. And since the Sabbath is the seventh day, the morning after the Sabbath is the eighth day. So Jesus was resurrected on an eighth day. Here we have a picture in the eighth day of the life of those whom God has separated unto himself, to whom the world is crucified and they to the world, that these live the resurrection life. In other words, they walk in a newness of life. No longer do they walk as they once walked, as children of wrath. They no longer walk in the ways of the world. They no longer walk after the flesh, but according to the Spirit and after the Spirit of God. And thus we find them. This is pictured in the circumcised child. Now you see, this brings our picture back to the present. It doesn't throw it off into the millennium. And we can't squeeze the two pictures together, because if we do, we blur the vision. But at any rate, it says Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born unto him. Well, that 100 is significant. We won't say too much about that just now. And she said, that is Sarah, who would have said unto Abraham that Sarah should have given children sons? For I have borne him a son in his old age. It takes me back, dear friends, to the prophecy of Isaiah in the 53rd chapter. Oh, there were many of those reports that had gone through the prophets of old, declaring the Messiah was to come. The promised seed, you see, he was to come. But when he did come, did they recognize him? And so the prophet says, well, who believed our report? Who would have believed it? And if anyone had said, oh, now listen here, that little child, that's the seed of promise, how many would have believed it? It was miraculous. Sarah hadn't given birth to any children. She was now 99 years old. And so you see, dear friends, time had gone by. And as a result, who would have believed it? Only he who can believe God. Only he who can turn his back on the flesh. You see, we lean on the flesh so much that when the flesh is gone, we just seem to fumble and stumble. But since this is the life of faith that we're considering, we must recognize that this child which was born was a child of faith, a child of Abraham through Sarah. For all the years that had preceded the coming of Christ, there had been much said about a coming Messiah. But we say that when Jesus was born, there had not yet come into existence one that could be called the child of faithful Abraham. Two, there were ancient worthies. They had obtained a good report through faith. And of course, anyone who is justified by faith is a miracle of grace. It couldn't be otherwise. But there had been none, there could be none, who preceded Jesus, for he must have the preeminence in all things. And in this too he had the preeminence. He was therefore the head of this seed, of this Christ. These were faith children, and God, seeing that he would justify the Gentiles in due time to become children of faith together with Christ as the antitypical seed before preached this gospel to Abraham. You see the point? It wasn't preached to others, but it was preached to Abraham, who would be the father of the faithful, to typify Jehovah God, the father of the antitypical Isaac, Jesus the head, and the church his body. Now, who would believe it? The scriptures have declared that this Christ was to be a composite one. True, it wasn't so clearly stated when in the Garden of Eden God said the seed of the woman would bruise the serpent's head. Reading that superficially and without the guidance of the Holy Spirit, we would conclude that that seed would probably be Cain, Abel, Seth, or some of the other children of Adam and Eve. At least, we wouldn't think it would be more than one in any event. We'd think it would be one. The seed of the woman would bruise the serpent's head. But dear friends, all the way down through the New Testament, though, you have the thought suggested that this seed is a composite seed. If ye be Christ, Paul addressing the saints, then are ye Abraham's seed and heirs of the promise. That makes it, of course, plural, a composite seed. And when in Romans, the 16th chapter and the 20th verse, the Apostle Paul declares, the God of peace shall crush Satan under your feet shortly. Under your feet, he's again addressing the saints, if he speaks a composite Christ. Now, this composite Christ has been in the process of development for 1900 years. There has been evidence of his presence here. As Brother Russell says, the world has seen Christ and the church suffer as a sin offering. Trouble is, they haven't recognized it. Nor can we expect them to recognize it. Who has believed the report? Who has believed the scriptural account that the promised seed of Abraham would be constituted of 144,000 gathered out from every nation, kindred, and tongue, would be selected from among humans to be associated with Christ? Who would believe it? No wonder Sarah said, who would have said unto Abraham that Sarah should have had given children suck, for I have borne him a son in his old age? Who would say that the Abrahamic covenant, the Sarah feature of that covenant, would ever develop such a Christ, a composite Christ? And yet the psalmist, in that beautiful 139th psalm, says, in his book, in God's thought, in God's purpose, all my members were written before there was a one of them. Isn't that wonderful? Well, who has believed it? Who believed the report? Well, dear friends, it's just about the same as it was with Jesus. And naturally it would be, because we are identified with Jesus. But then it says, and the child grew and was weaned. Now that's very, very interesting, dear friends. In Oriental countries, I believe they still practice it to this day. A child isn't weaned until it's about 2 or 3 years old. Not like in Europe, but a child would be 2 or 3 years old. And you know what it means to wean. Well, this word wean, of course, means to divert or to transfer or to put into another channel. That's the real significance of the word wean. But, of course, there's some that have said, well, maybe it came from the Scotch, wean, or a wee one, you know. But it isn't that. To wean meant to take away from the mother's breast. Now, the mother, she would partake of the food, she would digest it, and then in her love from her breast, she would feed it to the child, and the child would grow and develop as a result of that feeding. It's a beautiful picture of the Sarah covenant. In this covenant, we find the precious promises which by the Holy Spirit have been pre-digested, as it were, and fed to us in love, and we grow as a result of absorbing the love and the nourishment. In other words, it's not only truth that we absorb, but the love of the Father himself. It's important to get this picture in our minds, dear friends. It's not a case of merely taking food. There must be love with that food. And it's God's love that is manifested. You know, dear friends, it is possible for a mother to feed her nursing child in a fit of temper. And in that fit of temper, her own organism creates poison. And the child may die as a result of the food it obtains from its mother's breast. It's food, yes, but it isn't mixed with love, anger, hatred, malice, strife. So the food of which you and I must partake, if we would grow, is the food of divine truth mixed with the love of God. So many have divine truth, but they do not have the love of God shed abroad in their heart. Do you ever see anyone like that? Have you ever been like that? Oh, yes, you know the truth. But how do you speak it? Well, when you speak it, you almost knock people right off their feet. And the apostle says, speaking the truth in love, well, you understand? There's so much in these lessons here, friends, we can't have spend too much time. We've got to roll along, but we're trying to give you little things for you to take home as a sweet morsel under your tongue and then chew on it. Or if you want to be like the cow, swallow it now and bring it up again later and chew it some more. And you'll get still more nourishment. That's the reason the cow was an animal that could be used. It was a clean animal. It had a cloven hoof and it chewed the cud. Are you like that? Have you the cloven hoof? Oh, no, only the devil has that. Don't you believe it? It's your walk and your intake. How you take it in. Not so much as what you take in, but how you take it in. You can take in all the truth and have a thorough knowledge of it. I've known brethren that have known the divine plan of the ages quite thoroughly. But when it came to establishing it as the principle in their lives, love. It wasn't there. And you know, dear friends, with God, it must develop along these lines. And the child grew. And only as a result of that growth was it weaned. I'm just going to give you a suggestion. We're not dogmatic about this. This is merely a suggestion. After you have finished on all of this feeding, drinking in the word of truth, the precious promises and the love of God into your heart, you grow. And then there'll come a time when you're to be weak. No longer will the Abrahamic covenant be a means of life for you, but your existence will be independent of that Abrahamic covenant. In other words, and I mean the Sarah feature of that covenant, in other words, the time comes when you are to be translated from this earthly scene to the heavenly. You'll be weaned then. You'll no longer be dependent upon life for truth or love as a result of that covenant relationship which now subsists. But you will have an independent life. You'll be able to live on that which is aside from the covenant. Because when you have the divine nature, which is the very nature of God, you'll not be contingent upon anything else nor dependent upon it. And is it any wonder then, it says, and Abraham made a great feast the same day that Isaac was weaned. And we suggest here that when the church is glorified, Jehovah God will prepare a great feast. And all the world will be privileged to take in that feast. Now, this is merely by way of suggestion, though. We're not dogmatic about this. These are just little kernels to give out, and if you can see anything in it, take it in. If not, just forget about it and ask God to remove it from your mind. But dear friends, there is another thought in connection with this, and we shall get this shortly. But it says, and Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, which she had borne unto Abraham, mocking. Now, dear friends, we do not know whether it was on the occasion of the feast or sometime after. But let us assume it was the feast. It merely says, and Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, which she had borne unto Abraham, mocking. Now, we're, for the sake of our discussion here this afternoon, we're going to assume it was the occasion of the feast. You know, in these Oriental countries, and of course among the Hebrews in particular, when the child was ready to be weaned, oh, that was a great day. In other words, now it's got an independent existence, you see. Now it is somebody, you see. And so there would be a great feast. And one has suggested that at this time, the infant, the child, is brought forth arrayed in garments befitting this feast. And one might well imagine that here Abraham, with his heir, comes out. His heir is bedecked in the garments that bespeak his heirship. I don't mean an heirship. I mean his heirship, that he was the heir. Now, you can just well imagine. Ishmael was now about 16 or 17 years old. You see? There's a certain amount of responsibility that a youth of that age has. 16 or 17 years old. He had been brought up as the heir. He felt that he was the heir to all that Abraham had. Abraham had shown a very paternal interest in Ishmael, and after all, he was Abraham's son. And they must have had sweet communion with each other. I can imagine, since it was the only son that Abraham had until this time, he must have loved him. That friendly, fatherly relationship that existed between Ishmael and Abraham is something to think about. It makes me think of the relationship that existed between Jehovah God and the Israelitish nation before Christ came. The only ones that God recognized, you only have I known of all the families of the earth. Oh, that was a sweet, a blessed relationship. But he was wild, you know, nevertheless. He could stand his own ground. He could fight. He was an archer. That's what Ishmael was, even at his young age. And so when he saw what was taking place, here's a new heir that's being ushered in. I'll be displaced. And then he looked at Sarah, 99 years old. Can you imagine a woman 99 years old with maternal instincts trying to take care of a child? That was ridiculous. It just amused him, and he must have laughed and ridiculed it. And you know, to think of that little child, probably arrayed in these peculiar garments, bespeaking his heirship. Another little thing to laugh at. And thus, of course, you see, dear friends, how it was that he began to ridicule. In fact, the Apostle Paul uses the word mock. You see, he mocked. Now, dear friends, you've got to get behind that picture. It's easy enough to condemn the boy. But remember that Sarah was just as much at fault for what is now taking place. And Abraham was too. When Sarah suggested that he take Hagar to wife and raise a son unto himself, she was suggesting that which was contrary to the promise of God. That's where we lean on the flesh. We get into a difficult path, and what do? We lean on the flesh. Instead of leaning on the Lord. For instance, something happens, something goes wrong, and the first thing you know, where do we go? Oh, well, we tell brother, sister, so-and-so, you know, and we tell someone else, and we want their sympathy. The place to have gone with it is to the Lord. We're leaning on the flesh. We've leaned on it so long, you see. It's been with us so long. We were born in sin, shapen in iniquity. The flesh is always with us, isn't it? And so we find it hard at times to take our troubles to the Lord and leave them there. What makes it so hard sometimes is seems to pay no attention to our troubles. But dear friends, that's only apparent. He is paying attention. But there are certain experiences and certain trials that you and I need. And so when you don't see any immediate reaction to your prayer, and when you've taken to the trouble to the Lord, don't think that he's not paying any attention. He is. But he's seeing to it that the lesson that you need, you're going to get. And so God saw to it that Abraham would get the lesson that he needed, and that Sarah would get the lesson that she needed, and that Hagar would get the lesson she needed, and Ishmael the lesson that he needed. That's God's economy. He worked this beautifully. And of course, as you continue the story and watch it all, it's Sarah that says, cast out this bondwoman and her son. For the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. I can just imagine how she shook her little head. Old lady, 99 years old. Mrs. Abraham, I'll have none of this. Abraham might have said, well, now listen, Sarah. This would never have happened if you hadn't suggested it. And Sarah would have said, well, the mere fact that I suggested it was no reason why you should have done it. See? And there you have it. That's the way things start, isn't it? That's the way things start. It doesn't take much. You've got a tinderbox there, and you have it too close to the fire. Too close to the powder, I mean. And the first thing you know is a big explosion. It might have been worse, friends. But God interposed at this particular time. And through his interposition, Hagar and Ishmael are sent out now. It would have been much harder later. Hard enough as it was now. But dear friends, God works in a mysterious way his wonders to perform. And so we read, cast out this bondwoman and her son. For the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. And the thing was very grievous in Abram's sight because of his son. Do you notice the pathos in that? Don't you see the touching of his heartstrings, how it tugged away there? Sarah says, no, you get her out of here. I don't want her in this house. Sorry for her. She's come from Egypt. She was one that he brought from Egypt, if that means anything to you. Stop to think. And that which comes by way of Egypt has to do with the flesh. If he had never brought her from Egypt, oh, yes. What a word that is. But you notice, in every time you spell the word if, there's always an I. You understand? There would be no if without an I. I don't mean E-Y-E. I mean I-F. You see, we bring with us, when we come into the truth, some of the things from Egypt. We went down to Egypt once, you know, and we left Egypt. But when we left there, we brought some of our treasures with us. When Abraham left Ur of the Chaldees, he brought his father with him. He brought his nephew with him. One by one, these have been removed. And you notice the process of removing the things which would have a tendency to break down the faith of Abraham. So if in your life and my life we find where God, through the ministry of sadness or sorrow or strife or darkness or trial, deals with us, let us recognize this, dear friend, that behind the frowning providence, he hides a smiling face. You would never have been able to look up to Abraham as a father of the faithful if God hadn't dealt so with him. And so God deals with you and with me now. What did you bring from Egypt? I didn't bring anything from Egypt. Oh, no, of course you didn't. Aren't there some of the things that the world loves that you love too? Aren't there some of the good things of the world? Oh, that's good. There's nothing bad about them. True enough. Wasn't anything really bad about Hagar. She'd been a servant. She'd been a slave. And so some of these things that you bring along are slaves. Perhaps you care for the worldly amusement. Perhaps it's the magazine. Perhaps it's the radio. Perhaps it's worldly fellowship. Perhaps it's just amusement. You love to be entertained. Anything but sacrifice. Well, dear friends, if God is dealing with you, you can rest assured that none of these things that belong to the bondwoman, that belong to the flesh, can be heirs with that which is of the Spirit. So God will turn out of your life the things which are of the flesh. If you are to inherit the glory of the kingdom and be a joint heir together with Jesus, it'll be only as God has succeeded in ridding you. But he doesn't just take them out of your life. He tells you what to do. And God says to Abraham, let it not be grievous in my sight because of the lad and because of thy bondwoman. In all that Sarah hath said unto thee, hearken unto her voice. For in Isaac thy seed shall be called. And so you see, dear friend, there was a time when he hearkened to Sarah when he shouldn't have. Here was a time when he must now hearken to Sarah. But he would never have needed to hearken to Sarah the second time if he hadn't hearkened to her the first time. You see the point, dear friend? It isn't the last drink that the man drinks that gives him the death of the drunkard. It's the first drink that he ever took that makes him die the drunkard's death. And so, dear friends, if we are circumcised, the antitypical Isaac, let us be sure that we live a life of faith, standing on the promises of God. God bless you.